Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth here with Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast. Robbie, welcome back to Preds Insiders. I know you made an appearance Monday in our breaking news coverage of Peter Laviolette being fired by the Nashville Predators, but officially back in the studio. I've been trying to get you on in the last week. First of all, the Cotton Bowl press box decided to lose power and cut me off in the middle of the first segment of Preds Insiders after the postgame show at the Winter Classic. So, strike one, and then strike two, we were going to have you in studio Monday evening, and then the news broke, and you had to go do your NHL.com duties. So here, there's strike two. So here we are, third time's a charm. Welcome back to the show.
The prodigal son has returned to the show.
You are right.
Third time's the charm, my friend. Hopefully nothing happens this time that forces me to leave.
100%. Well, Robbie Stanley, good to have you back here on Preds Insiders in studio with us. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Monday evening, obviously, the shocking news coming down about 5:30 that Peter Laviolette and Kevin McCarthy had been let go. We didn't know who the coach was going to be for last night's game against the Boston Bruins until about 9:30, 10 o'clock yesterday morning when the Preds announced that John Hines, former Devils coach, would now be the third coach in Nashville Predators history. And we are going to get to a lot of what we heard in the press conference from both David Poile and John Hines and kind of reflect on Peter Laviolette's time behind the bench for the Nashville Predators. But last night, Preds lose 6-2 to the Boston Bruins in John Hines' coaching debut. First thing I want to get to there is that I think it's hard to judge anything off of that game last night because, A, kind of feel like the players' heads may not have truly 100% been in that game. The previous 24 hours had been something that a lot of them had not experienced before. And B, John Hines, the first time he had an opportunity to stand behind the bench or at least be with the team was a game and not a practice.
Yeah, I'm not sure he even knew the players' names. Yeah. He's like, you, go out there. Yeah. Change. You play with him.
23.
Yeah, 23. You go. Yeah, I don't put much stock into last night's game at all. I will say it looked kind of like more of the same in terms of what we've seen from the Predators
sure.
a few times this year. And whether that had to do with just kind of everything that had happened before the game with the coaching change and bringing John Hines in, Peter Laviolette on the way out, everything that surrounded that, it's obviously you try to be as professional as you can and just focus on the hockey game, but you're also human. There's a lot of things going on. Sometimes you're just not fully focused. And the other part of it is they played a really, really good team in the Boston Bruins, and you have to play really sharply. You have to be at your best in order to beat teams like that, and they obviously were not last night. I thought they played well in the second period. The first period was rough. Mm-hmm. It was tough to watch. Played much better in the second period. And then, you know, Boston knows how to score timely goals, and that's what happened late in the second and into the third period as well. So, more of the same from what we've seen a lot of times from the Predators so far this year. And now you're hoping with the new system, which we'll talk about here in a minute, that you can start to turn this thing around.
Well, you mentioned how last night was a lot of what we've seen already this season. I think you can say that for sure about the man between the pipes.
Yeah.
Number 35, David Pastrnak, 32nd goal of the season. He is on an absolute tear. He's one of those players that, usually when he scores a goal, you tip your hat to him and say, you know what?
Yeah.
That's the premier goal scorer in the National Hockey League right now. But that was a slap shot that Pekka in his better days would stop. And with each passing game like that that Pekka has, I'm more and more sold that this is old Pekka and not the old Pekka.
Right. No, I agree. And look, he should have stopped that puck. There's no way around it. I understand this David Pastrnak, and he's been unbelievable this year. He's going to end up maybe with 60 goals. He's on pace for it.
Sure.
So It's been an incredible year for him so far. But you got to stop that puck, especially when you're in the situation the Predators have been in. Those are the saves that they're not getting. And it's not just Pecorino. UC Saros isn't making those saves either for the most part. And that just puts you behind the eight ball. There's so little margin for error in this league that when you're not making the saves that you have to make, it's tough to win. And the Predators have experienced that all season long. You know, they played better after that. Pekka played better after that, made some good saves after that. But that doesn't absolve you from the saves that you should have made earlier in the game.
Pekka also looked out of place and almost like a fish out of water sometimes, and may have had some luck in terms of the fact that the puck didn't get past him and in between the pipe or, you know, across the goal line. Like, there were some chances right after that goal where I'm sitting there thinking, man, he's about to give up another.
Yeah. Oh, they were under
siege. It just felt like that kind of night for Pekka.
It did. And he was fighting it. And that's what it boils down to. And he's been fighting it a lot this year. And, you know, sometimes when, you know, you get to be 37 years old, this just happens. And we knew it was going to happen at some point. And we've kind of been waiting to see, is this just a bad stretch he's going through, or is he reaching the end? And the more I watch him play, the more I'm starting to think that he may be reaching the end of what's been an incredible career so far. We know it's not going to last much longer, regardless of how long he plays, but it just hadn't been pretty for the most part this year. And sometimes it's like your reflexes are gone by, you know, 0.2 seconds, and that's enough. That's enough to make a difference in a league that's as fast and as skilled as the NHL is.
Well, here's maybe one of the confusing parts for me with Pecorino is that back in October, there were a lot of games where he looked like the old Pekka. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was a combination of a couple games that have forced him or that have caused him to take a step back. You know, the Calgary game, he let in some soft goals as they made that comeback. Colorado game let in some soft goals, but the whole team was just a complete disaster. Yeah. But I would have expected it to maybe happen over the course of an offseason. You start the season with some performances like we just mentioned or the one last night and not come out guns a-blazing in October, and we're having the conversation of could he be a Vezina Trophy contender, and then almost happening overnight, him turning into this goaltender that we're witnessing right now.
Yeah, and but I mean, the sad reality is we're going on 2.5 months of this now. All of November, all of December, and this part of January so far. So at some point, you got to dig your way out of it, man, and that's got to happen with one of the two of them if the Predators have any hope of going anywhere. You can make all the changes you want to the roster, to the coaching staff, whatever it is, but your goalies aren't stopping the puck, you're not going to win, and that's what it boils down to. It's the most important position in this sport, and they've got to be better in that area, and both goaltenders have to take responsibility for that.
I mean, look, I feel like I've been Pecorino's biggest fan.
Sure.
Over this last decade, all of us have really enjoyed Pecorino between the pipes. Completely agree with you that this is a long enough sample size, at least for now, to suggest that this is probably, you know, father time catching up to Pecorino. And I wonder, I would want to know from you, how long of a good stretch from Pecorino would it take for you to think, okay, maybe he isn't, you know, suffering from the age and he's getting back on track?
It'd have to be 1.5 months for me, at least, I think. I mean, you can get hot for a little while, and I expect that when these new changes come in and maybe the team's playing better in front of him, maybe he does get hot. But I need to see it for an extended period of time. Just like we've seen him struggle for an extended period of time, I would need to see that for a pretty good stretch for me to believe that he's still got enough left in the tank to take this team on a deep run. And that's what I'm kind of basing the metric on. Does he have enough left in the tank maybe to get them to the playoffs? Maybe. I mean, we'll see. Does he have enough left in the tank to take them to a Stanley Cup run? Mm-hmm. And that's what the real question is. That's what everybody in this market and on this team wants to know. And right now, it would be tough for me to say yes that he does based on what I've seen.
Well, I texted you last night after the Pasternak goal and said, new coaches aren't going to stop the pucks.
No.
And that was one that he should have had.
Yeah.
And he just didn't look like himself last night, but maybe this is the new Pecorino and this is him until he retires from the game of hockey. You know, over the last couple months, this 2.5 month period that you're talking about, he's had a handful of quality games. He had that shutout in Carolina after being on the pine for three straight games, mm-hmm. where you're thinking, okay, maybe this is the galvanizing part for Pekka moving forward. Mm-hmm. But we just haven't seen it. He continues to be up and down, and it's a lot more down than up.
Yeah, it certainly isn't. And I will say this, the penalty kill continues to be an issue for this team. He's certainly a part of that and has not been good in terms of his save percentage and some pucks he should have stopped while they're on the penalty kill. The penalty kill last night was awful, and I tweeted that out. I mean, they left Patrice Bergeron by himself in front of the net with no one within 20 feet of him.
That was make it 3-1?
Yeah, and that can't happen, especially with that guy. Like, there are three guys on Boston you need to really pay attention to. You can't just abandon them, and that's happened way too often this year on the penalty kill. The penalty kill is terrible, and that's got to be better.
The last thing I wanted to get to from last night's game before we move on to the big picture of this coaching change is do not mess with Jakob Trenin.
Apparently not.
I thought he was going to get his butt kicked by Zdeno Chara in that fight in the third period, and he clocked Chara in the jaw. That was something else. I was not expecting that from Trenin.
I saw the thing develop and out loud said, no, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And then I was like, oh, wow. You know, he's number one, he's still alive. That's good. Mm-hmm. Step number one. But he tagged Zdeno Chara pretty good right in the chin. It's, you know, it's not often you see somebody, number one, look like they're anywhere near competent fighting Zdeno Chara. But you get a lot of street cred doing that around the league. Jakob Trenin has been very impressive. He's a straight line player. We've talked about that before. He's something I think this lineup needs, and doesn't hurt that you can throw him and hold your own every now and then with the toughest player in the league. So kudos to him. That takes a lot of bravery to be able to do that, and I thought he held his own pretty well.
Well, and he has scored two goals in his, what, nine games that he's played, both of them deflections in front. This team has lacked that in recent years of having enough bodies or traffic in front of the net. If Trenin can be that kind of a player, I think John Hines needs to keep him in the lineup on the fourth line. Maybe you give him, you know, some second power play unit mm-hmm. time, see what he might be able to do in front of the net. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
This power play is slowly dipping into what it was last year in terms of not being able to count on them to score big goals.
No, there's no question about it. And I would – everything needs to be on the table, I think, in terms of changes you can make, different looks you could present to the opposition. I think – they've reached that point of the season, especially on the special teams part of their game, where nothing's really working at this point. It's time to change up, I think, anything that you can in order to try to ignite this team.
Coming up next, we react to David Poile's pair of press conferences, both acknowledging the firing of Peter Laviolette and introducing John Hines as the new head coach of the Nashville Predators. We'll get into all of that coming up next. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth and Robbie Stanley here with you on this Wednesday evening. We're taking you up until Smashville Live at 7 p.m. Chase McCabe will be hosting alongside Ida Bjornstad and Julie Turris, the significant others of Matthias Ekholm and Kyle Turris. They are also the co-host of the Off Ice podcast. Always an interesting conversation between those two when those two get together, being Ida and Julie. They will be joining Chase McCabe. Interesting point of view always from those two with what's happening with this team, what it's like to be the significant other of players on a National Hockey League team. So that's coming up at 7 o'clock at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. You can go out there. You can meet Nash. You can meet the Preds energy team. You can meet Ida and Julie. Don't meet Chase. I think that's taking it too far.
Yeah, avoid that.
Yeah. Just worry about Ida and Julie. Don't worry about Chase. And we kid. And also go out and register to win tickets to see the Preds take on the Anaheim Ducks next Thursday, January 16th at Bridgestone Arena. So Robbie Stanley here with us on Preds Insiders. And yesterday was an interesting day, to say the least. Really, from about 5:35 Monday evening all the way through the game last night, just an odd, unique, interesting time to both cover this team and follow this team. The fact that Peter Laviolette is out, John Hines is in as the third ever coach for the Nashville Predators. I just kind of want to get your takeaway, Robbie, from what you heard from David Poile, not John Hines, but David Poile yesterday when he addressed the firing of Peter Laviolette.
Well, I sensed a ton of frustration from David Poile yesterday, and it wasn't directed at Peter Laviolette. It wasn't directed at Kevin McCarthy. pretty much the vibe I got from the press conference yesterday is he is very upset with the players on his team. He does not believe they've come anywhere close to meeting the expectations that have been set both internally and externally. And basically, he said, you know, look, he's going to take some responsibility for this in David Poyle, but ultimately it's on the players as well. So I think the tone of that press conference yesterday was really eye-opening to me. It almost sounded like he was, like, absolving Peter Laviolette of blame, but just getting to the point where, you know, I can't fire every player on the team. I have to fire the coach at that point. So some pretty intense words from David Poyle yesterday, and I was pretty kind of amazed at how frustrated visibly he was.
That was as frustrated as I've ever seen him. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I've never seen him that, maybe you could say, direct or poignant in a press conference setting. I mean, this is the clip you're talking about. And this was my biggest takeaway as well. This was the clip of David Poyle saying he will take some responsibility, but the players, they better take responsibility as well.
I've met with the players this morning. I've talked to a few guys. My message to the players was that I'm responsible for this. I'm responsible for this change, and I take that responsibility. But you as players have to share in the responsibility of what's taking place today.
That was David Poyle yesterday at his first press conference, but before they introduced John Hines. And I think the blame game is an interesting part of this because it's difficult, I think, for a lot of people to divvy up the pie.
Yeah.
How much of this was Peter Laviolette? How much of this was the players? How much of this is on David Poyle for some of the misses that he's had, either through free agency or particular through trade in the last couple years? How would you maybe assess why we're in the position that we're in, talking about the Nashville Predators now having a new coach?
Well, I think it's all of it. I think everybody shares in blame. Peter Laviolette, and I've talked about this for weeks now on the Locked On Predators podcast, I think the system, there were some real issues with it. I don't think it maximized the potential of all of the forwards. I mean, it's not a coincidence to me that Mikael Granlund was a 60-point player in Minnesota, and it can hardly be productive here. It's not a coincidence to me that Kyle Turris was a 55-point player in Ottawa, and all of a sudden he can't do anything here. And you know, you can make the same case for Matt Duchene. He hasn't been as impressive here as he was in Columbus/Ottawa last year. So at some point you have to ask yourself, okay, are all of these players just coming here and falling off the table in terms of their production, or is there something wrong with the system that you're running? So I think Peter Laviolette's system and the way they were doing things, that deserves a ton of the blame. And I don't think, had they kept him, it was going to get any better. And I think David Poyle recognized that, and he talked about some system issues yesterday that he's looking to change. But some of it's on the players as well. I mean, Ryan Johansson has been a part of this system for a long time, ever since he came here to Nashville. He's not having that good of a year. Victor Arvidsson, even though he's been injured, really not having that good of a year. Hasn't been as noticeable as Victor Arvidsson typically is. I mean, you can make that case for a lot of people, really, other than Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, and the Bonino line. You can pretty much make that case for everybody.
Philip Forsberg has not been the same Philip Forsberg that we've seen in recent years, where he can just take over games at times. Yes, he does have 14 or now 15 goals, but he hasn't had that take over the game, this is, you know, putting the team on my back type mentality. Really, the only player that has had that mentality on this team is Roman Josi.
Yeah. No, there's no question. And so I think there's plenty of blame to go around. The next step of this is you make a move like this, and this is part of why I think David Poyle took the tone that he took yesterday in his press conference, was you need to get the players' attention. And he was talking directly to his players through the media yesterday in terms of the messaging that he was trying to send. If they don't respond to it now and the second half of the season doesn't look a whole lot better, regardless of the coaching change, regardless of the system changes that you're going to implement, if just the effort and the execution and everything doesn't look better in the second half of the season, the next step is going to be, do we have the right players in this room? Mm-hmm. And I think David Poyle is willing to make some pretty drastic changes at that point if they don't respond well in the second half.
Well, I thought his response was interesting to a question that Jared Stillman asked of, do you feel like some of the players that have received long-term contracts have become comfortable since receiving those contracts. When that question was being asked, I expected David Poile to maybe deflect that or say that's not an issue.
Right.
But the fact that he basically said, look, that could very well be an issue. And if it is, then I need to correct that. I'm sitting there like, well, this is more than just a Peter Laviolette problem as to why this team is 5 points out of a playoff spot.
There's no question. And he essentially said in that answer that if he comes to the conclusion that that is an issue with this team, he is going to do everything in his power to make them as uncomfortable as they possibly can be. And I took that to mean if he finds out that players are fat and happy with the contracts that they've received and he feels like that's the case, he's getting them out of there. And that's what I took from that press conference. So, like I said, a lot of frustration to go around, a lot of blame to go around for sure. But I want to make sure that I want to convey that I think Peter Laviolette's system was a big part of the problem. But this is on the players, too. It goes hand in hand.
Here's David Poile yesterday saying that he did not think this was going to turn around in the second half status quo.
Just felt that we just were not going to turn the corner. And again, in Anaheim, to not let anybody off the hook. I mean, our best players, other than Roman Josi, were not our best players. And, you know, that's one of the visuals that I have when I'm looking at our team. It always starts with your best players. And our best players weren't our best players, haven't been our best players, and they must become our best players if we're going to be successful.
That was David Poile yesterday at his press conference. And you can probably think that he's talking to, let's start with Pekka-Rinne.
Yep.
But also Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene, probably a couple of players that he signed to extensions in the calendar year of 2019, and Colton Sissons, Austin Watson. Those two haven't been performing this season the way they have in recent years.
Yep.
Mikael Granlund in a contract year has not looked anything like he did in Minnesota before the trade last year at the trade deadline. There's a lot of players he's speaking to there.
I mean, he's speaking to pretty much the whole team. I mean, Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, and like I said, the Bonino line of late have been very, very good. But really, other than those five players, there's not much that's going right for this group so far this year. Now, obviously, Trennan and Blackwell, the recent call-ups, they've been fine for the most part. They haven't been up here long enough for me to consider them a huge part of the problem. But look, I mean, David Poile is usually pretty reserved in his comments to the media. He's always open. He's always honest. But he never really goes out of his way to fully put people on blast. He did that yesterday. And we heard the term again yesterday. And they've said this. I know if they've said it one time this year, they've said it 100 times. Wake up call, wake up call, wake up call. They said it again yesterday at the morning skate, reacting to the news of Peter Laviolette being fired. And then you go out and lay a 6-2 egg that night, which, I like I said before, I don't know how much I hold that against them. But this better be a wake up call, because if it's not, this team's going to look real different come next year.
But before we get into the John Hines part of this equation, Peter Laviolette did speak to Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic. I was surprised that Peter Laviolette spoke that soon after the firing, but Peter Laviolette was quoted in this story. I'm going to read a couple quotes. One, quote, "There has been a lot of success, but with that success, I do think the expectations can change for your organization, and they do become a little bit harder for the entire organization to deal with and to handle." That was one quote from Peter Laviolette. Another, where he says, quote, "When I look back on my time in Nashville, I'm going to have such great memories of not only David and the ownership, but also the players, staff, and coaches that I was able to work with on a daily basis. Our fans are just incredible. I mean, the building is incredible. Everybody experienced the playoff runs and the energy that came to Nashville. It was awesome. I will remember that for the rest of my life." So that was Peter Laviolette to Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic. A little surprised we saw some quotes from him so soon, but I mean, he also admitted in the story that if you're in the business long enough, you don't really expect it, but you come to know that this is part of the business that you work in.
Yeah, like I don't think Peter Laviolette was totally blindsided by what happened. Did he expect to get fired at this particular time? I don't know. Maybe not. But he's been around long enough, and quite frankly, he's been fired often enough to where he knows kind of what to look for when this happens. He's going to bounce back. He's going to get another job if he wants another job. He's a very good coach. I think Predators fans are going to look back on the time that Peter Laviolette had here pretty fondly. But I was also kind of surprised that he had some quotes and did some interviews as quickly as he did, and that tells me that at least he's handling the situation as well as can be expected.
What does John Hines' second half checklist look like as he now takes over behind the Nashville Predators bench? We'll get into that coming up next. He's Robbie Stanley of NHL.com. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into this Wednesday edition. Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth, Robbie Stanley here with you on this Wednesday evening. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard downtown. So yesterday, Robbie, John Hines, weird situation for him, basically walks in blind, doesn't really know any of the players on this roster, at least very well,
yep,
and doesn't get a practice before this team hits the ice to play their first game under his leadership. Like we said at the top, we can't really take anything into account, at least from the John Hines point of view, of what happened last night. But he doesn't have much time to turn this thing around. And this team is 5 points out of a playoff spot. It's a very competitive Western Conference. 5 points doesn't seem a lot, but with it being so competitive and so jam-packed in the West, you're going to have to beat out a lot of teams just to get into the playoff picture and stay there and make it to the playoffs in April. So with that in mind, Robbie, what does John Hines' checklist look like to get this thing turned around here in the second half?
Well, I think the first thing is tactical. You've got to make some system tweaks in order to maximize the talent on this roster. And if he said that phrase once yesterday at the press conference, he probably said it 10 times. Yep. I want to maximize the talent on this roster. And in order to do that, I think some tweaks are going to be necessary. You're going to see some system adjustments. I don't think you're going to see a complete system overhaul because, quite frankly, there's just not time to do that. I mean, the Predators played the fewest amount of games in the West in the first half of the season. They're going to play the most amount of games in the second half just because that's the way the schedule is going to break down. So because of that, you're not going to have a lot of time for practice. You're going to have to take advantage of each opportunity you get to practice. The All-Star break's coming up. You can't meet with the players then. The bye week's coming up. You can't meet with the players then. So it's not like you have a ton of time to put in a new system. You do have time to make some adjustments. You do have time to change some things that I think were illustrated pretty heavily and pretty clearly for John Hines last night. And he talked about in his press conference yesterday how watching the team from afar, you could see some inconsistencies in their game. You could see some things tactically that could be adjusted. And I think after the way the game unfolded last night, he got a pretty clear picture of what needs to be done in terms of that. I think you'll see some system adjustments. He seems to me, just from what I've seen from him and what I've heard from him, he's less concerned about the time you're possessing the puck and more concerned about how dangerous you are when you do possess the puck. And I think Peter Laviolette, obviously he wanted to be dangerous as well, but he wanted that puck all the time. He always wanted to be pushing the pace. He always wanted to be coming through the neutral zone, sometimes with some high-risk plays. I think you're going to see less of the high-risk plays from John Hines and more emphasis on managing the puck. He talked about that a ton yesterday, both before the game and after the game as well, in terms of managing the puck better. The Predators, quite frankly, have been horrible at doing that so far this year. And those are some tactical adjustments that I think you're going to see. That's number one on the checklist. And number two, to me, is a mentality. I think we've seen far too often this year when things start to go bad for this team, it just snowballs. And when you have a veteran group like this, that cannot happen. That cannot be the case, especially a group that's been through as much as this core group has been through. So to me, it's an attitude adjustment. It's a different mentality that, you know, things aren't always going to go right. But when that happens, you got to be able to suck it up, move on, and keep playing. And they haven't done that this year. I think that John Hines has got to get them to be able to do that.
Well, you were at practice today, and it seemed like, I was not there, but just reading things on Twitter while practice was going on, is that Dante Fabro and Ryan Ellis, they were observing a lot from the bench, that John Hines was doing a lot of teaching during practice. So it kind of sounds like he's trying to do that right away and not, you know, sit on his hands and just simply observe what this team is doing.
Yeah, and he talked about last night after the game how you don't want to overwhelm people. There's a lot of things, a lot of information that you want to present. There's a lot of different tweaks that you want to make. But if you try to do everything at once, it's all going to become white noise at some point, and you're not going to really learn what I think you could be learning at that point. So I think this is going to be a slow process. Remember, they play tomorrow in Chicago, and then they come back. They got a couple practice days in Nashville before they go to Winnipeg. Those are part of what I'm talking about. You've got to take advantage of each practice opportunity that you get in order to learn some of these new things. So it's going to be a process. It's going to take 5, 6, 7 games to really get some of these new ideas down, and it's going to take longer than that to really get, I think, fully what he wants to do with this group down. But that's just going to be something the players are going to, number one, have to be open to. But number two, I think the fans are going to have to be patient with.
Well, and like you said, you can't do anything with the players over the break. They come out of the break with 4 games in 6 nights, yep, something like that. There's a lot of different road trips coming up. So these practice days, he's getting 3 practice days this week here in Nashville.
Yep.
Today, like you said, Friday and Saturday before they go to Winnipeg, there is not a whole lot of time for him to kind of be patient with this. You also don't want to, like you said, give them too much to think about. So there's got to be that delicate balance between the two. Who do you think benefits the most on this roster from this coaching change?
Well, you would hope that it would be your star players, your forwards that have underachieved so far this year. Ryan Johansson, you know, Mikael Granlund, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, and you hope guys that have traditionally been productive throughout their careers, number one, whatever tweaks they make would maximize their abilities. But number two, I think it gives players a fresh start. Kyle Turris is the first player that comes to mind when I think of that. Mikael Granlund as well. Maybe they weren't being used the right way. Maybe they weren't being maximized to the top of their abilities. I know they certainly felt that way. If that's the case, now's your time to prove it, because if you go through this staff and it looks the same, all of a sudden you're saying maybe it wasn't the coaching, maybe it's just you. You got to get that figured out. So I think those two players specifically come to mind, Kyle Turris and Mikael Granlund. I think this is a huge opportunity for them to really have a clean slate, to start over with their career of the Nashville Predators. And I think it puts pressure on Johansson and Forsberg and Arvidsson and Duchesne to really get moving in the right way offensively. We've seen it at times this year, but not anywhere near consistently enough, and that has to change.
I mean, those are the four, realistically, that can take over games or put the team on their back for games at a time.
Yep.
Like, Craig Smith, Nick Bonino, Rocco Grimaldi has been a fantastic line this season, probably their most consistent and reliable line, but you're not going to rely on them to provide all the offense. You can't. If you do,
you're in trouble.
You're not going to win many games. We saw what Rocco Grimaldi leading the team in goal scoring last year did for them in the postseason.
Not a whole lot.
So I do agree with you that the top forwards on this team have to be those four, and then Kyle Turris and Mikael Granlund as well. I also wonder, let's say Turris and Granlund just continue to do what they've been doing, and they are even put in some better opportunities or better situations for them. Then I think we're looking back on GM David Poile and the assets that he gave up for those two players alone and saying, wasn't worth it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Sam Girard's looking real good right now in Colorado.
I think a lot of Preds fans would trade Kyle Turris for Sam Girard right now.
Yeah, they would. There's no question about it. He's looking real good. You know, Kevin Fiala, I mean, he hadn't been great in Minnesota, and I don't think Kevin Fiala, personality-wise, was a very good fit with this group and with this locker room. But right now, I mean, the way that Mikael Granlund has played during his tenure with the Predators, unless something drastic changes in the second half of this season, I don't think there's a chance that they're even entertaining the thought of bringing him back next year. And that's not something I would have thought when they made that trade a year ago.
So one thought that I have on John Hines, and I think the instant reaction from a lot of fans on Twitter was, oh, he was the Devils coach, their record sucked, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Well, he had a horrible team, horrible roster. And a lot of times you can't really judge a coach off of being a coach within a rebuild process. The Devils have been squarely in a real rebuild process, really, the entire time that he was there.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can really judge John Hines off of that. I think we are going to be judging John Hines, and I think a lot of the league will be as well, off what he does here in Nashville as he now has a lot of good pieces to work with.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that they didn't go the interim route. And here's why. And I think I had a different opinion Monday night on the show in the midst of all the breaking news coverage. But the more I've thought about it here in the last 48 hours is there could be some other big changes with coaches at the end of this season. I particularly look at one in Tampa Bay, that if the Tampa Bay Lightning get bounced in the first round, John Cooper may not be there going into next season,
yeah.
Especially after they just won the President's Trophy and then get swept in the first round. I'm a little surprised they didn't go the interim route, see what the interim coach could do, whether that's John Hines, whether that's Dan Lambert, whether that's Carl Taylor in Milwaukee. See what they have, almost treat it like the Craig Berube situation in St. Louis, and then resurvey everything in the offseason. And let's say a John Cooper is out there or somebody else that we're not expecting that could have been a better option than John Hines. John Hines could come here and be exactly what this team needs. We're all going to learn together. I think if we have a definitive statement on whether or not John Hines is the answer or not, we're just guessing. We're just throwing darts right now. I am a little surprised, though, that they didn't go the interim route.
I am, too. And with how quickly it all happened, you got to remember, I mean, Peter Laviolette was fired basically, or it was at least announced at 5:30 on Monday night. You know, 16 hours later, they had their coach. I mean, he was here. So that lets you know that David Poile knew what was going to happen for a long time, or at least, you know, a week or so. He had his guy in mind, and whenever he made the move to fire Peter Laviolette, John Hines was his guy. He didn't have time to do a whole lot else, I don't think. So I don't think it was a situation where he was like, I'm going to this guy, he said no. I'm going to that guy, he said no, and you ended up with John Hines. He wanted John Hines all along. So the question then becomes, what does David Poile, or what has he heard about John Hines that allows him to have so much belief in him? We know his connection with Ray Shiro. Poile and Ray Shiro are very tight. But at the end of the day, John Hines was fired from the New Jersey Devils. Now, if you talk to people up there, I think they didn't want to do that, but the way the team was playing and with the infusion of talent they had specifically this year, I think they felt like they had no choice. But if you've seen the Devils play since then, it ain't the coach, let me tell you. It's that roster.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had some people tweet me some pretty strong opinions yesterday after the announcement of Hines, one way or the other, about how, hey, this is a great hire, this is going to be great for the Predators, or how could they do this? This is an absolutely awful hire. Why would you do this? Look at his record with the Devils. I don't think there's any way you could possibly tell. Like, people have asked me what I think about the hire. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to happen.
And it's not like we spent a lot of time watching a lot of Devils hockey over the last 4 years. Yeah. Nobody gives a flying hoot about Devils hockey here in Nashville.
No. People barely care in New Jersey. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. So I think if you're sold one way or the other of how this is going to play out, I just think that's naive at this point. Like you said, we're all going to learn about John Hines together. I think that David Poile is taking a leap of faith. I had this thought yesterday at the press conference too. This is probably going to be the last coach that David Poile ever hires. So he is putting all of his eggs into the John Hines basket. It's very risky, but we'll see if it works out.
I've long said that David Poile moving on from Barry Trotz and hiring Peter Laviolette was the best thing he did for this franchise. This coaching hire might be the most important one if he wants the last thing that he doesn't have on that mantle.
Yeah.
Seriously. Like you said, this could be it for David Poile in terms of coaching hires in the National Hockey League. Coming up next, speaking of Peter Laviolette, we'll remember his time in Nashville and what his era meant to this team. We'll get to that next. He's Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Robbie Stanley on this Wednesday evening. We're taking you up until Smashville Live, top of the hour. Keep it locked right here. Chase McCabe will be joined by Ida Bjornstad and Julie Turris, the significant others of Matthias Ekholm and Kyle Turris, respectively. They will be out at Smashville Live at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. If you're driving out and about wanting something to do, head on over to Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. You can also register to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds host the Ducks next Thursday night at Bridgestone Arena. And I bring in Robbie once again. And Peter Laviolette had a record of 248, 143, and 60 behind the Predators bench. In his five-plus seasons, never missed the playoffs. There are five banners in the rafters that were not there before. They didn't have any banners in the rafters before Peter Laviolette took over behind the bench and even took this team to a Stanley Cup final. And I think we would both agree that his time was running out. If not, it was time for a change like this to happen, even though we were kind of shocked at the timing of it and the fact that it actually happened Monday night. Peter Laviolette did a ton of good for this team. And even though this season has been up and down and not anywhere close to where David Poile or anybody in this market would want it to be, the fact that Peter Laviolette won a Western Conference, won a President's Trophy, put banners in the rafters, and under his direction, this team became the thing in town. I think Peter Laviolette's time in Nashville is going to be looked upon, you know, years down the road as being a really quality five-plus years behind the Preds bench.
I think it was the turning point of the franchise. I mean, this is when the team graduated from being kind of the cute little expansion team that could, that was trying to really scratch and claw its way to be competitive every year, to graduating into one of the NHL's elite. I mean, you take a look at the playoff streak, the winning that Peter Laviolette was able to do both in the regular season and in the playoffs, the banners, as you said, that he was able to collect. This was the turning point of the franchise. This is when you became serious about winning and serious about being a contender for the Stanley Cup. Look, I mean, a move like this early on in the franchise, it would not have been made. It was made because the expectations have gotten to a point where they're expecting to compete for a championship. And Peter Laviolette deserves a whole lot of credit for that. David Poile does as well, obviously. But Peter Laviolette has won everywhere he's been. Carolina, he won. Philadelphia, he won. Here, he won. Now, he also has a shelf life, and maybe we've seen that as well. But I think when Predators fans look back on his tenure, they should look back very fondly. I know a lot of people, the last 3 months or so, and really even farther than that, dating back to last year, the way the playoffs ended, the way they kind of sputtered into the playoffs throughout the regular season, maybe that sours Peter Laviolette's tenure a little bit for some people. For me, I look at the larger picture, and I see a whole lot of success that was made here. And, you know, from our standpoint in the media, he wasn't always the easiest guy to deal with, but he was always, for the most part, pretty professional, a kind guy, just did things differently than Barry Trotz did, as all coaches do. They're all a little bit different in the way they handle things. But all in all, I thought both the players loved playing for him and the fans loved the time that he had as their coach, and there was a whole lot of winning that was done. Anytime you go to a Stanley Cup final, you're going to endear yourself to a fan base. So I think Peter Laviolette's time in Nashville should be looked back on with pretty much everything being positive. I think it was a really, really good tenure for Peter Laviolette here.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see how this team responds to him exiting and John Hines coming in. When you look at Peter Laviolette's other exits in Carolina and Philadelphia, those teams took a year or two to get back to where they might want to go or want to be. So this is not really a team that can afford to go through 1 or 2 years of not being a playoff team or not being a serious contender in the Western Conference. You know, this team is in win-now mode.
Yeah.
And that obviously is a big reason why David Poile made this move, is the fact that they were completely underperforming, and you're running out of time. In the big picture, you're running out of time to maximize that Stanley Cup, I'll say window, but who knows what windows are
your
anymore.
Your opportunity to win.
Yes. Yeah. And their best opportunity to win is in the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. And with the group that you have locked up long term, you just can't afford to wait. And sometimes if you're a general manager, you can be patient, you can plan for the future, you can have a long-term plan. The other factor in this is David Poile is 70 years old. I mean, this is not, he's not getting any younger. His chances to win are not getting any bigger. He's got to do it now. Otherwise, he's going to run out of time. So this is something that I think David Poile felt like he had to do. I still don't think he was happy about doing it. I think a lot of his anger is directed toward the player, and now it's on them. They've got to be able to respond to this, and if they don't respond to this, you got to take a look. Number one, you got to look at David Poyle and say, all right, did you bring the right guys in here? And number two, if you're David Poyle, you got to make some pretty serious changes, because ever since 2017, you win the President's Trophy the year after, you have a tough-fought series with Winnipeg, and it kind of is what it is. Really, ever since that Winnipeg series, it's been going the wrong way, and that's something they've got to get fixed.
The consistency issues with this team, I kind of feel like, started at the start of that postseason. Because remember, they flip-flopped with the Jets. I mean, it was loss, win. I mean, they went back and forth that entire series. They also didn't look like themselves against Colorado.
They really didn't.
For a lot of that series back in 2018. I mean, really, ever since they won the President's Trophy, it hasn't felt the same around this team for whatever reason.
It hasn't. And they had a brief stretch the year after where they started 13-3, and then Arvidsson got hurt, and Forsberg got hurt. Everybody got hurt. And they never recovered from it. They were just, I mean, they were basically a 500 team after that. They've been basically a 500 team ever since.
Sure.
And that's something, when you take a look at the talent on the roster, you're like, how can that be? Like, you got Roman Josi putting up, I mean, he's going to put up 80 points this year, maybe more, maybe more than 80 points this year. And if you would have told me that before the year started, I would have said, well, the Predators are going to end up having 130 points in the regular season if he does that, because you would expect everybody, Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson, Duchesne, to be as productive as they have been in their career. And if you add in 80 points from Roman Josi to that, all of a sudden you're looking at a team that's pretty near unstoppable. And really the opposite of that has happened. Roman Josi is physically dragging this team with him. Where would they be without him is my question.
They would probably be in the basement of the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Scary thought.
It is.
And tomorrow night they will visit the Chicago Blackhawks, a team that is just 1 point behind them in the standings, even though the Preds have two games in hand on them. So it is go time for this Preds team to kick it into gear. We'll see how they respond in game two under John Hines tomorrow night. Pre-game 6:30, puck drop 7:30. All the action heard right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie, so good to have you back in studio. Good to see your beautiful face. Thank you for joining us here on Preds Insiders.
You too, you legend. Thank you.
For Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast, I'm Ryan Poore. Thanks for listening. Coming up next, it is Smashville Live from Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Chase McCabe joined by Ida Bjornstad and Julie Turris. Keep it locked right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game National app.